Hello there. You are about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity, where Sal from Comic Pop and myself dive deep into the Spider-Man movies leading up to Spider-Man No Way Home. If you would like to join us for the rest of our Spider-Verse spanning journey, exploring movies like the original trilogy, Spider-Man's 1, 2, and 3, and The Amazing Spider-Man, be sure to head on over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers and become a patron today. Now on with the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Spider-Versity. My name, you're here, so you know, my name is DJ Wildridge, and if you're starting with Amazing Spider-Man, well, I mean, thank you. First off, thank you, but also, weird, you start back with Spider-Man 1, but in case you don't know, with me, as always, is Sal. Sal, say hi to the kids at home.
Hi, kids. I'm Sal.
And for those that don't know, remind them. Where they can find you and what you're up to.
I am always up to comics, my friend. I'm reading comics, talking about them, and you can follow along with me at youtube.com/comicpop or anywhere Comic Pop is found in the audio spectrum or in the video world on YouTube, etc. And yeah, we'll have a good time. Come on by.
I love that. Just it's in the it's in the ether. Like anywhere you find audio or video, just pull out Comic Pop.
Just look it up and
look it up, and it's there.
Pluck it out of the tree. Yeah.
So as I mentioned, we've been going through all the Spider-Man movies leading up to No Way Home because guess what? Turns out they all count, and literally yep. Every single one of them. So this was a good decision we made. And we did the first three Spider-Man movies directed by Sam Raimi and starring Tobey Maguire. And now we're off to something different. This is Amazing Spider-Man, the first Amazing Spider-Man film to transition us. They were working on a Spider-Man 4 with Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire. And everybody was based on my research, everybody was kind of like, well, I think we're done. I think we're not.
Literally, yeah, like they were we've seen storyboards and like they're clearly working on it. And they're like, yeah, and then Vulture and... Hey, you know, why don't we just not do this?
Yeah, why don't we just not? Yeah, it's, you know what? That's and honestly, on paper, I think that's the right instinct. But then we got Amazing Spider-Man, and then I have questions.
Yeah. I feel bad for them because this is the year. It's the same year that Avengers comes out, they make this Spider-Man movie.
Oh, woof. Well, and it was interesting. We've mentioned talking about the other Spider-Man movies that it's interesting how post-Sam Raimi, you know, Sam Raimi's films really kicked off the superhero renaissance. Obviously, before that was Blade and then X-Men. But Spider-Man's like, hey, this is a thing now. But it's interesting how post-Sam Raimi, we're cribbing notes off of other more successful superhero films. Specifically, the biggest year for the Spider-Man franchise is not any year that a Sam Raimi movie came out. It is the year Dark Knight and Iron Man came out, 2008, right?
Yeah.
Because those two films dictated the future of the franchise more than any Sam Raimi film.
Completely. No, that was Hollywood going like, okay, that or this.
And what's
but
interesting,
Amazing Spider-Man's like, how about both?
Yeah, how about both of them? Hold on. It looks like my camera turned off. So, back now. Oh, good. We're back now. Never mind. Sorry.
All right.
Can you see me okay? Oh, actually, no, you can't see me, can you?
I can't see you, but if it works, that's fine. Like,
Hold on. One second. Let us see what's happening here. Can you see me now? Hell
yeah. You're back.
Let me make a little note because the kids don't need any of that junk.
Nah.
Okay. So we've got Dark Knight and Iron Man. And what's interesting is the lane they choose. Is the harder one to pull off, which is the Dark Knight lane. It's like, what if we Dark Knight it? And I think a lot of people, this has been a trap that has befallen many a franchise. I specifically think of Man of Steel and the whole Snyderverse thing, which is like,
completely.
Which is also, in hindsight, now looking back, it was like, oh, well, this is always doomed for failure for a variety of reasons.
Yes.
One of which is like, what if we do Dark Knight and the MCU at the same time? And it's like, you might have to pick a lane on that one.
Yeah, those two tastes do not taste great together.
And I think what part of what makes it complicated, having rewatched it now, because obviously the Sam Raimi films, even Spider-Man 3, I've revisited more than any Amazing Spider-Man film.
Same. Absolutely the same. And I kind of missed it after seeing this. I was like, you know, maybe I was a little harsh on Spider-Man 3.
It is interesting because it's similar to, I felt similarly. Although I will say up front that prior to this, I watched it twice. A friend of the show, Hector Navarro, had me over to watch it in 3D because he was like, if you're going to watch it in 3D because it is better in 3D. And he's right. It is objectively true. They shot it on 3D cameras and you can tell, like when you're watching a 2D, it's like, oh, this is a movie. When you're watching 3D, you're like, oh, that you were trying things. It was just in 3D. You were doing visually interesting stuff. It was just in the 3D space. And so you're watching 2D. Then that doesn't mean anything. So if you can, I do recommend watching it in 3D. It was with a group of people and we were laughing and we were having fun. And it was really like the ideal way to watch it.
Yes.
And then I watched it again because for those that don't know, I take extensive notes for this. And so I watched it again, very detail oriented, focused on what the movie was doing. And that is objectively the worst way to watch this movie because
completely.
It's like,
yeah,
wait,
paying attention to it hard does not help this movie.
Wait, this doesn't make any sense.
No, I watched it alone yesterday while eating dinner, and I was just like looking at it like I was literally halfway through. I'm like, okay, so I watched all of Spider-Man 3 without nearly as much hemming and hawing as this. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just like, that doesn't work.
And it is interesting too I think we can both agree that if we're being generous, Spider-Man 3 is not a good movie.
It is not.
But even in its not goodness, it is fun and it's entertaining and this, especially the notes process of this one. It's like, this one was a chore. This one is just, cause it's
this
not
was,
like,
this was work.
It's not like fun. It's just like, but anyway. And so, and I think the other thing, going back to the Dark Knight of it all, or specifically the Batman Begins of it all. Yeah. I think of all the franchise that tried to do the dark and gritty reboot, the one example I can think of that it worked was Casino Royale. And the thing that James Bond has in common with Batman is Batman has a very clear origin point, but like from that to Batman was uncharted territory.
Agreed.
Similar to James Bond, like we've never spent any time of like how did James Bond become James Bond?
Right.
Spider-Man not only has a very popular origin, his origin movie is one of the most popular superhero movies ever. So we already know. So you're just doing it again.
Yeah. No, I kind of like, it's interesting to see this movie because it is, it's clear that Sony doesn't know what to do. You know, they're like, it felt quick, like rushed, you know, like we're not making 4, let's make this and we'll just pull from everything and just make this thing. I get why Feige was like, no origin.
Yes.
With MCU Spider-Man. Like, I get it. He's like, because it's like almost 2/3 of the movie is all this buildup. And I'm like, who cares?
Yes.
Like, and who doesn't know? And then you get to it. You get to the origin. Like, and I'm like, this is, none of this is working.
Yeah. It's like, what if we did what Spider-Man 1 did, but also took longer?
It took longer. It made it more complicated and less fun. There's no joy in this movie.
Yeah. And it's like we talked about with Spider-Man 1. One of the things it seemed like we were kind of both enjoying about it was the proficiency of the way it like got to within like 5 minutes, he's bit by the spider. Like, we know what we're doing. We're doing it. Let's go.
Yeah. We get it. Like, we get his relationship with Uncle Ben, Aunt May, Mary Jane, and powers. Boom. Moving on.
Done. So anyway, that's our early thoughts, in case you kind of wanted to know where this is going. Early thoughts on Amazing Spider-Man.
Where this is gonna go.
Let's dive into it. So the synopsis on IMDb is, after Peter Parker is bitten by a genetically altered spider, he gains newfound spider-like powers and ventures out to save the city from the machinations of a mysterious reptilian foe, which other than those last two, literally one word in that, it's like, well, we've already gotten that movie.
It's the same damn movie.
This one shocked me. Rotten Tomatoes. The Rotten Tomatoes scores a 72%.
No.
It is fresh. It is certified fresh. And the audience scores 77%.
That's insane.
Baffling, because I will say, like you, especially revisiting, I was like, well, you know what, there are parts of it that do work, but 72% is, because I thought culturally we were on the same page, like, hey, Amazing was a misfire.
Right. Now I get, like, because there's a lot of rumors going around about No Way Home, because No Way Home has not, at the time of this taping, come out yet.
Yes.
So we still don't know.
Yeah.
But I get why now there is so much hype around Andrew Garfield, because apparently he's most people's favorite Spider-Man.
According to these numbers, he's people's most favorite. Just a side note, how hilarious would it be if Toby and Andrew Garfield do not show up in No Way Home?
Oh my God. I kind of hope they don't. Like, just for the outrage alone, it'll just be nonsense. I'll be scrolling through TikTok just like, ah, just one collective scream from 18 different people.
Yes.
I would love to see that.
That would be great. The critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes today, well-chosen cast and sure-handed direction follow the Amazing Spider-Man, allow the Amazing Spider-Man to thrill, despite revisiting many of the same plot points from 2002 Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Sure. It is directed by Mark Webb, who most famously did 500 Days of Summer. He directed the pilot for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is a show I recommend. And he's also doing the Snow White reboot, which I did not care about, but I just recently got an early screening of West Side Story, and Rachel Segler's really, really good in it. So good for her, and she's going to be Snow White now. It was written by James Vanderbilt, Steve Kloves, and, of course, Alvin Sargent, who also worked on 2 and 3. And we commented on this that we didn't, like, what did Alvin Sargent work on other than these Spider-Man movies? Found out in doing research for this, he was the husband of Laura Ziskin, who was one of the main producers on this. And it's like, oh,
now we get it.
Now it makes sense. And also, Laura Ziskin passed away before this movie was released. Like, a lot of people, James Horner, who did the score for it, passed away after this movie.
Wow.
Irfan Khan, who is unfortunately woofully underutilized in this movie, has passed away since. It's like, if you're big in believing in, like, movie curses, it's like, I'm surprised this one's not on more people's circuit. Like, a lot of people associated with it are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Of course. Interesting. It has Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker / Spider-Man, Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, Rhys Ifans as Kurt Connor / Lizard, Irfan Khan, just like I mentioned, Dennis Leary as Captain Stacy, Martin Sheen as Uncle Ben, Sally Field as Aunt May, Campbell Scott as Richard Parker, and Beth Davis as Mary Parker, Chris Zilka as Flash Thompson, and C. Thomas Howe as Jack's father. And just to point this out, he was in a movie called Soul Man where he did blackface, and I watched the trailer for it last night. And it is shocking. It came out the year I was born, and it's like, this is, oh, wowie, wee, whoa. Anyway, let's dive into the movie. So we get little hints. The musical vibe is different right off the bat. I think James Horner's score is one of the high points of this movie. But it's definitely more serious. This is serious.
That's what this movie is. It's just every time they, like, there's a little bit of joy, they're like, wait a minute, we're Batmaning this.
This is serious.
Because when you talk about this cast, this reminded me, if you went, you know, to me in the past and said, like, by the way, they're going to make a Spider-Man movie, here's the cast, I'd be like, wow. It'd be like Batman Begins when they announce the cast ahead of time, and you're like, there's no way, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's an amazing cast. And it is an amazing cast. Woefully underutilized, but it's also, they're clearly being pushed into a serious direction.
Yeah.
Everybody has to be deadly serious.
Super serious. When you talk about the cast and everything, there are a lot of moments watching this movie that I was like, it would make more sense to me if this was the movie, this was the first Spider-Man movie, and then the same, it's like after this one, Sam Raimi came in and like, no, this is what the character is. And you're like, yeah, this is what we wanted. Like, this is,
this felt like a
late 90s, like a 90s version of, like, we're still not super confident about the character, so we've got to do these things. To sell it better.
Yes. Yeah, it feels much more like a studio picture.
Yes.
Than even the Spider-Man movies.
So the we get a little bit of the CG webs, but like no opening credit sequence, which, if I'm being honest, I kind of missed.
Big time.
And we start with a mystery that every once in a while the comics will go to and nobody cares about. And so it's nobody's favorite plot line. What happened to Peter's parents? We've got young Peter Parker playing hide and seek with a very like dour kind of scary hide and seek with his dad. And his dad's not fucking around it. He like sets a booby trap of like shoes and a hat. Like,
just a deadly serious game of hide and go seek with his deadly serious father.
And we see that I guess somebody has broken into Richard's home office,
right?
And they run away. He grabs his son, he runs away. They take him to Uncle Ben and Aunt May. We do see, I should mention, because this is important and it's very lame, we see on his billboard, we see, or billboard, his blackboard, we see like spider stuff. His dad's doing spider stuff. And
yeah. Boy, yeah, like we need that. Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's funny because like in the Ultimate Comics, Richard Parker was a scientist who was working on the Venom suit and worked with a number of notable characters who appear in not only Ultimate Comics, but also in Ultimate Spider-Man. And so you can tell they're kind of like playing with that. But for some reason, and I remember the trailer for this movie, they were like, we're really leaning into the mystery of Peter's parents. Yeah. And I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but you can feel someone upstairs who really cares about this. Like, someone is like, don't forget that the thing... Like, yeah, it's about Spider-Man, yeah, whatever. But, like, it's really about this mystery. And it's like, they never answer it with any sincerity or validity. And it's just, like, every time they remind you of it, it just... like, the movie's just like, hit the brakes on this thing. And it's just... This is not... It's funny, because I know it's coming, right? You know that, like, the airplane scene from the next movie is coming. Mm-hmm. And it's like... That's more egregious than this, I think. But this is pretty rough.
Well, and they hint around it. And I'm also going to be candid. I think when I first watched, I actually think I watched this after I'd seen Amazing Spider-Man 2. I watched Amazing Spider-Man 2. We covered it for SourceFed. And then I saw it because I saw the trailers for this and I was like, no thanks. And but then I saw two and I'm like, okay, I'll go back and I'll watch one. And so for me, my memory of two kind of bleeds together.
Yes, yes.
But they're definitely, even here, they're definitely like, somebody watched Ang Lee's Hulk and was like, you know what? That's a great idea. And it's not, though. It's
no! Like, because that's
Here's the thing. It basically starts making Peter as like a chosen one. Like the idea that his dad was working on it. And like there's a lot of like it's implied that a lot of like Peter's science knowledge comes from his dad, as if you can inherit that genetically.
Yeah.
And it's gross. I don't like it. Peter should just be a dude that was bit by a spider. It doesn't need to be some sort of destiny.
No. And it could just be he likes science because Uncle Ben told him his dad likes science. Like that's all you need.
There you go.
But... they're going to get in the weeds with the whole inherited destiny thing, because later they're going to be like, you know, you get those powers because of your father. Like,
yes.
Like,
gross.
None of this works. And then it doesn't line up because of like the circumstances by which Peter gets his powers. It's just like, no, none of that works.
And your other option, you mentioned the ultimate backstory. The other option is the mainstream MC or Marvel
where they're super spies. And it's they're like, secret agents. And they
and beyond that, even if they're just people, which they should just be people, if you're trying to broach not just that, but the loss of Uncle Ben, and it's just a tragedy pile up. Like you can't.
No,
it's a bad choice.
Sorrow comes from Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben's death is the saddest. We don't need to worry about Richard Mary. Like it's not like, listen, every YA story, every single YA story kills the parents, or at least one of them. But it doesn't like complicate it by being like, my parents are dead, my father figure then dies. Like they don't make it all piled up unless it's a series of unfortunate events. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, you don't complicate that's what it's about, tragedy.
Yeah.
This is just like Uncle Ben is the fulcrum. Uncle Ben, well, we'll get into it. When he talks about the overly complicated, super serious version of his mantra.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even Uncle Ben's.
Yeah, which is also like, contextually, it's like weird. Like, I feel like you're kind of blowing this out of proportion. But anyway.
Completely.
We're not even close to that yet.
We've got a whole
other half of the movie to get through.
He's got
to
get powers first, and that's another 45 minutes.
Jeez. Anyway, so they run off. Peter's dropped off with his aunt and uncle.
Yep.
And I love that the mom leaves with very generic, he likes to have the crust on his sandwiches removed, and he needs a nightlight. And it's like, well, do you even know your kid? Does he have other interests or things?
Right? Nope. These are the things that I remember.
I should probably be grateful, because if they tried to be more specific, he's like, he likes spiders. Stop it. Just cut it out.
Yeah, you're right. They would have been like, he likes insects. He has a bug collection.
So we segue to Peter in high school, and it's still Lord of the Flies. That's one thing that doesn't change no matter what. He gets hit in the head with a basketball from Flash. A hot girl asks him if he's busy Friday, but it's to take pictures of her boyfriend's car.
Yep.
We find out that Peter's a skateboarder, which fuck that shit.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, I remember it being super egregious when it came out. This time I'm just like, nah, whatever. They're trying something. You know, he doesn't, I for the longest time until they like actually address it, I was like, he's not really a nerd at all. Like, no. He dresses like most people at this age. He's obviously much older than everybody who should be in school, but like it's a little closer. But he doesn't wear glasses, but then it turns out he wears contacts. But I don't know. It's just like, what is his problem?
Yeah.
You know,
that's like, the thing. They, instead of positioning him as like a nerd or a dweeb, because it's like, I understand criticisms of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, but he's believably a dweeb. Like, that is his thing.
Yes.
They kind of go with like an outsider. It's almost like James Dean, Rebel Without a Cause outsider. And it's like, that's not Peter Parker.
No,
that's cool. Peter Parker's not
Peter
cool.
Parker, at this age, he would have absolutely been already getting laid. Like, there's no question that dude would have been like crushing it.
Because if nothing else,
in his life,
he looks like Andrew Garfield.
There's nothing about him that, like, you know how like, Toby goes through the transformation. They at least the one shot where he has his shirt off, which is terrible looking, you know, they CG him being all like, you know, young Steve Rogers, and then he gets buff. This is just, he never gets more buff than he already is.
Yes.
He's just sexy Andrew Garfield, which like, listen, with his skateboarding and his stuttering and his, you know, cavalier attitude towards authority, the chicks will be all over him.
Exactly.
The ones in his wheelhouse, and it doesn't make any sense to me. But I mean, they're going for something. They're like, we want, like, it's weird what they choose to like change and what they choose to keep.
Yes.
And when they keep it, they have to change it too.
Yeah.
Like, anything that has to, that is what it is, it's got to go.
It's got to go. So anyway, it's like whole thing, all the high school stuff. Students are like straight up making out, blocking his locker. And I just always, whenever I see stuff like that, it's like, how many takes did they have to do? These two people, they're just, I feel like that'd be weird to film. Anyway.
It's rough. I've been in that situation. I was in a play once where I had to like make out with someone like 20 different takes. And I was like, you know, it wasn't bad, but it was still like exhausting. It was like, this is not comfortable.
Well, and then, like
no one's enjoying this at this point.
Yeah, exactly. What if you're the girl and the guy's creepy or what? I don't know. Anyway, whatever. So we get more of Flash beating up on another kid, a young, weaker kid.
Peter Parker character.
Exactly. That's the real Peter Parker. Peter tries to stand up for him, but it ends up being, and the Flash beats the crap out of Peter.
I like that scene, though.
Yeah,
it's,
I do,
it's
too.
Not bad.
Honestly, one of the things that kind of justifies this movie's existence is what they do with Flash. Like, oh,
totally.
This is actually really interesting.
He knows his real name, which implies the past history, which they occasionally will retcon in that, like, Peter and Flash were friends when they were kids.
Yeah.
Like, that's real. It's not a 616 story, but like it is everywhere else. So like, I'll take that. I like the idea that like Peter and Flash were friends. Flash got cool, Peter didn't, and he left him behind. Well, but I know shit about what you were up to when you were like five, so, you know, don't forget it. But I like that. That was pretty cool. And Flash is partially irredeemable, but like, you know, no one's going to stand in his way because he's rich and white, so like, whatever.
Yeah. I actually, Flash in the comics becomes a really rich and interesting character.
Yes.
And this is like the only, they do some of that with a friend of the show, Tony Revolori. But this is like, it's interesting. We'll get into that more later, because they do some interesting stuff with it. And then Gwen comes up and gives Flash a stern talking to, which I don't know why this means anything to anybody. Like, why is this bad?
For that, I was like, are we doing it again? Where it's like, is Gwen dating Flash? And then she just isn't.
Yes.
You know, like later she just asks him out and I'm like, were they dating? Was there a deleted scene where they did date and she broke up with him? I don't know, but like, there's no way that she would just tutor Flash. Like,
yeah.
I don't see that happening. So
yeah, and it's just
really
one of those,
awkward.
It reminded me a little bit of light spoilers for Promising Young Woman, but like her big thing is like she gives all these date rapist dudes a stern talking to, and that's all they need. And it's like, what reality do you live in? Like, why?
Right.
How is this enough? But anyway,
I don't live in reality. I live in hyper reality.
Peter and Gwen kind of connect in class, and this is the other thing that almost justifies this movie existence is Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone together. All of their scenes are like, oh well, these are the best scenes in the movie. This is why this movie exists.
Yeah, completely. No, I like it. Everyone talks about their chemistry where they're like, oh, their chemistry. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I get it. But like, it's more that they're both good actors.
Yes.
Who aren't like forced to be in the same scenes together. Yes. You know, like I dig it. But when they are together, you know, like there's a later scene where the two of them are together and it's exhausting. It's like watching a Hugh Grant love story where I'm like, all right, dial it down. I don't know if that's like what your thing is, but like his... The only time he is a dweeb is when he's talking to Gwen, but yeah. She thinks it's sexy, and I'm like, I don't understand what this is.
Yeah.
But I do love, I mean, and I think that really is, I think it's just Emma Stone being great.
Yes. Yeah, she's great, and Andrew Garfield is good in this movie, and I think he's a good pick for Spider-Man. I will say, I just saw him in Tick, Tick, Boom, and he's really good in that, the Netflix musical directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I will say that if I were to give notes, some of his affectations in this are a little theatrical. Like, it's like a little like, well, we need to crank that back down to a little bit more of a human level. Like,
right. There is a moment he has that I really like where I'm like, that is what like a nerd would do at this point. And it's just that when he's making the web shooters and he does this little like thing where he's like, it's working.
Yeah,
like, that's great. But yeah, everything else is kind of like, all right, all right. Like, he's two characters.
Yeah.
Like, he's really cool or he's Spider-Man.
Yeah. So we're back at the Parkers. There's a flood in the basement. Ben needs Peter's help with it because I guess his genius extends to fixing water. Like that's the implication. Like, Ben asks him a question and Peter has a kind of complicated answer. And it's like, okay, I guess you're an omni-genius or whatever. Uh-huh. Most of the nerds I know aren't necessarily mechanically savvy, but whatever.
Nope.
Ben, of course, is able to clock immediately that Peter's been in a fight. And of course, it's Martin Sheen. Like, ever since West Wing, he's Hollywood's dad. Like, he is the dad. Like, if sure, I love Cliff Robertson. If you're going to recast Ben Parker, especially at this stage in the Spider-Man movie making, Martin Sheen is the best choice.
And you're not going to spend so much money because he's only in the movie for a little while and then you're never going to see him again. Yeah. So like, it works fine. Yeah. I like Martin Sheen in this. It's also one of those, like, it's shorthand. It's casting shorthand that I, you know, normally I ding a movie for. In this case, it's Martin Sheen. He's playing a bit character in Uncle Ben. It's fine. But like, I call it the Ironside effect, where it's like, I need a character who we don't have any time on the page to explain who they are, give them backstory or depth. You know, if they're like a bad guy and they're in a government or like, you know, corporate authority figure, just cast Michael Ironside. Everyone will get it.
Well, yeah, exactly. We all immediately know what we're going for and move on. Yeah. That's a incredibly good point.
But so, that's Martin Sheen where they went, we don't have time.
Yeah.
Martin Sheen, they'll be sad when he dies.
Of course we will. So it's the flood in the basement. So they're pulling stuff out, and Peter stumbles across his dad's top secret briefcase. And Ben and May are like, "Oh, your dad told us to keep us keep that safe." It's like, how are you doing on that?
That was I got like Ben and Baru like vibes from that, where it was like, you know, hey, anything? I think those droids might have been stolen, and they're like, they look at each other like, oh, geez, here we go, like we're blowing it already. In this case, I got them being like, we don't want you to have, I didn't want you to have found that briefcase. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to go down this road.
I felt bad throwing it out, so the best I could do was just shoving it under stairs.
Yeah, just shove it under the stairs. Like, I'm not going to throw it away, but I'm also not going to give it to Peter at any point. He found it. Crap. Fine. Okay. Like, let's just try to downplay its importance, which I was like, I like that, but I hate this subplot. So, but I do want to award the movie as an accolade when it earns one. And I think in that case, there's actual acting and plot going on. It's just who gives a crap? Because it's Spider-Man. It's not a mystery about who killed their parents because we never find out. And it doesn't matter. And it's stupid.
We don't. And also, based on these two movies, I don't think they knew what the mystery, like, what's the solution to the mystery?
Based on the post-credit scene, they have no idea what they're doing.
Oh my God, we'll get to that. In the briefcase, he finds a picture of his dad and Kirk Connors. Of course, we don't know who that is yet. He also finds an Oscar ID badge and his dad's glasses, which, of course, when he was a kid, he was playing with earlier. And like you mentioned earlier, he takes out his contacts and wears dad's glasses.
They have the same prescription.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Whatever indeed.
Peter finds a secret compartment in the thing, and it And I like that the movie goes out of its way to imply that there's like a button in the briefcase to open the compartment. It's like, I think that's a,
it's
leather.
A leather briefcase.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. And then Peter has this like crazy automated lock on his door. And it's like, well, you could just, you can't just lock it. It's too, you can't get up and like turn a lock. Right. Okay.
Yeah. What is this, Pee-wee's Playhouse? We need to have a whole Rube Goldberg machine so you can just show how smart you are. We know he's smart. It's Spider-Man. We've seen three movies where he's smart. But this is the first Spider-Man with web shooters on screen, so we need to really like sell it.
Sell it. I do.
Because the higher up said it's complicated. They won't believe it. So
I have questions about the web shooters, but I do like their inclusion.
Same.
Yeah, I do. Again, it's like a lot. It's like, I appreciate what you're doing. I wish you did it better.
That's it. That's it. That's it. Yeah.
So he finds the secret notes. Ben comes in. He comments on how Peter looks like his dad, which he sort of does. He reveals that it's the guy in the picture is Kurt Connors. And he also notices that Peter has a picture of Gwen on his computer. It is a class picture, and there's another girl in that part. And I wish it was like, no, I was talking about the other, not Emma Stone, the other girl.
No, the redhead.
Yeah. So then, of course, Peter does what anybody would do when he's given a piece of information, like, oh, I've got to research this. He goes straight to Bing, because where else would you go?
Who doesn't use Bing? Yeah, it's the most, it's the world's most popular web search option.
Also, I've got a, I'm not a huge fan of using the search engine as an exposition machine of like who Kurt Connors is, whatever.
Yeah.
So... Peter goes to Oscorp. He's stopped by the receptionist, who thinks he's a part of, I guess, the internship program, and he just grabs a random badge. Oh, I do need to mention, when he's looking at the badges, he pauses, and she's like, are you having trouble finding yourself?
Oh, my God. She does it twice, and I'm like, no. And they will do that a couple times in this movie, where it's just like, do you know who you are?
Yeah, in case
you
missed it.
Are you having trouble finding yourself?
In case you were hit on the head before walking into the theater, he picks a random badge of a dude whose last name, I think the last name is Guevara.
Yeah.
And I had to wonder if maybe this was a dig at him, because the character he plays, Eduardo Saverin in Social Network, is supposed to be of, like, I think it's Brazilian descent. And so I wonder if it was a dig at that. I will say, I did look up the actual guy before I did this, and he does look like a lot like Andrew Garfield. You know, the classic Hollywood where it's like,
okay,
Andrew Garfield's the better looking version of that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I just wondered if it had anything to do with that. There is a hollow billboard, a lot of hologram. It's interesting because when you do like read quotes from Mark Webb, and you're like, I wanted to be more grounded. I wanted to be more realistic. I wanted to be whatever.
Yeah.
And there's holograms all over the goddamn place.
The key entry to a random door that has no, like, it just has hinges and a knob.
Yeah. Also,
they still have to do.
They do the touch thing, but it still functions like a key. There's no reason that shouldn't be a keypad. It's not like it has nothing. It's not like genetically it doesn't read your genetic. None of that. It's just a keypad.
It doesn't even look connected to the door.
It sure doesn't. Anyway, but we get our first sort of look at Osborn in silhouette. Whatever.
Oh, I love that. When I saw that, I'm like, oh, they don't even know what they're doing. Like, they have no idea. They were so impressed with themselves. You could tell by, like, the effort that it took to construct the building. Like, the building is a character.
Yeah.
And then you find out later that they were like, oh, well, we actually were going to send the files for the building to the Avengers guys to put Oscorp Tower in there. And I'm like, who cares about Oscorp Tower?
Yeah.
There's nothing distinct about it. It just looks like a stupid building with his dumb name on it. There's nothing about that matters. And then, like, Oscorp or Osborn is, like, in shadow. And I'm like, you don't even know who Osborn is.
Yes.
Like, you have no idea.
Yeah. And again, Irfan, and I'm going to bring this up a couple times, but only for the first half of the movie, because that's the only part he's in. Irfan Khan's, like, right there. It's like, did you talk? He could just be Osborn. Also,
yeah, he could just be Osborn.
He could also be Kurt Connors. Like, he's right there. Anyway, whatever. We find out that Gwen Stacy is leading the interns, and we also see the kid whose badge Peter stole is getting violently escorted out of the building.
Yeah, he's like screaming his head off. They're all making fun of him and laughing at him, and I'm like, oh, this is problematic. This is also the convenience building. Oscorp, Kara Connors works there. Gwen's there too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's an internship meeting happening right now.
Mm-hmm. So he's Peter's sort of a part of that. I love the way Kurt Connors introduces himself because it's immediately antagonistic. He's like,
oh yeah.
He's like, you see my missing arm? Fuck you. I'm a great scientist. I'm doing all these great things. And it's like, whoa, nobody said anything. Like, why are you?
Yeah. What'd you say about my arm? Dude, nothing. You said that.
You're coming in so hot right now. Nobody.
Totally.
It's 2012. We're not going to make fun of you for missing an arm, guy. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's really weird. He's super into it. I do like the idea that he, like, that he's insecure about it, but also you never see that outside of that one instance. It's not like he's, like, you get a lot of that in other media where Kirk Connors is like, God, if only I had my other arm.
Yeah.
In this, it's more like, I don't have an arm.
It'd be funny if the movie, like, really, like, drove it home. Like, people keep throwing stuff to him and he goes to catch it with a missing arm and he's like, oh, my arm.
That feels a little, oh, yeah. I don't know. I think I might like that. I mean, it seems a little cruel, but, like, maybe that's what it needs. Maybe that's how you make him human.
I also like when he's in there, like, I am the foremost herpetologist in the world. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Because that just means you're a lizard guy. You're doing high-tech bioengineering here. They're not going to get a bioengineer?
Yeah, they don't need the... It's like they don't need great drillers to send into space to blow up the comet.
Yes.
They need great astronauts to learn how to drill. They don't need a lizard specialist to come up with cross-species geneticism.
Yeah, it's just a wild, like... All right, anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I will say, because especially when you get into the back half of this movie, as far as the script and plotting, it really feels like it's been put through a paper shredder. So I went and I looked at the deleted scenes, and there's a lot of deleted scenes that, like, oh, this is why you cast Reese Ifans. Like, when you watch the movie, you're like, man, this could be anybody. And then you see the deleted scenes where there's it really humanizes the character a lot. I will say it doesn't, none of them really make the movie make any more sense. Mm. But it's one of those, like, oh, I actually care about this person.
Okay.
I will say, broader note, we do get it. We see him with a wedding band. We do get, in one of the deleted scenes, we get a hint of his kids. It is genuinely a baffling decision that we don't engage with Kurt Connors' family at all. Like,
that's really weird.
That's like, other than becoming a lizard man, that's kind of his main, that's what makes him becoming a lizard man problematic.
Yeah, that's why it's sad he's a lizard man, is that he has a family and he needs to get back to it. Otherwise, yeah, I completely forgot about the pathos of Kurt Connors.
Yeah.
Because he's just a monster. The way I looked at it, I remember seeing, like, all of his transformation sequences, and I'm like, did Reese Ifans really want to be in a werewolf movie? Is that the idea? Because, you know, like, some actors get their craw, like Chris, like, what was it? Ben Kingsley was in Blood Rain.
Yes.
Because he's like, I always wanted to be a vampire. And I'm like, you could have picked other projects to be a vampire.
Oh my God, I forgot Ben Kingsley is in fucking Blood Rain. That is fucking hilarious.
And I imagine that Reese Ifans the same way, where he's like, I tried out for, you know, Del Toro's werewolf movie. I didn't get it, so next best thing, were-lizard.
Yeah.
And because he really is, like, going for it. He's going for broke in his transformations, and I'm like, he seems like he's enjoying this. I'm not.
Yeah.
But... So whatever.
Anyway, so he's a herpetologist. He wants to fix himself. He wants to make.
But is he also a derpetologist?
Yes. He also wants to make a world without weakness, which, if I'm being honest, sounds like Nazi stuff.
Really weird. But this is the kind of thing that they shove in the mouths of these scientists, where they're like, "We're going to make a world without death or weakness or sin or whatever." And it's like,
yeah,
all right.
Carno's motivation is very abstract and hard to follow. Like, it's very ambiguous how much of, because there's moments where it's like he's a good guy, but the lizard's the bad guy, and then it's just confusing.
Yeah,
it's
but then he knows about, like, he's clearly like he's complacent in the Parker's death, so it's like he's not that good.
Yeah. He asks if anybody knows how he plans to make a world without weakness, and of course, who knows the answer? Peter knows the answer because he's the science's special boy. This moment is cute. Again, like, the Peter Gwen stuff works. Gwen introduces introduces Peter as he's the second in his class, and Gwen and Peter have a little exchange. And I'm like, this is cute. I'm into this.
Yeah. Yep.
The hologram technology is crazy. We get the Tree of Life with all the crazy hologram stuff.
Yeah.
So Peter goes to follow Kurt. Gwen stops him. They have another little, she's like, are you following me? Which is, she says it like it's cute, but it's like, if you really think that, that's creepy.
Right, like, because he is, like, and I like that he isn't.
Yes.
You know, because, like, that I appreciate, as opposed to, because he does take a picture of her, but, like, I kind of get, they set up that he is a photographer and he takes pictures, like, for fun. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that, like, I find it less creepy than, like, when Peter's taking pictures of Mary Jane for the school paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
like, you're not going to use that in the school paper.
Yes, we know what you're using that for, and we can't show it in this PG-13 movie. No, I like that. And I will say, I do like that they keep, I am bummed that we never see him get a job, but I am glad we keep the photography aspect of it. It's a part of the character that really means something to me, and it kind of bums me out that we've lost it in the MCU movies. Anyway,
who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe the Andrew Garfield will hand him his camera with the Peter Parker's name plastered on the back. Anyway,
yeah,
just in case you leave this behind, so the villain can find out who you are. Anyway, so they have their little exchange. Peter bumps into Irfan Khan, he's basically the board. Remember in Spider-Man 1, the board that Green Goblin kills?
Yes.
That's Irfan Khan in this movie.
Yeah, we should send this to the, the Veterans Hospital, yeah.
And by the way, Irfan Khan's character has a name, but I don't give a shit, so I'm not going to use it.
it's not related to anything in the comics, like, it's just they made up another name.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, the rumor was it was supposed to be a character, like, named Van Adder, who I guess was, like, a proto-Green Goblin, but that also is lame, so I don't give a shit, like, it doesn't matter. No. He should have just been Osborn. He would have been a great Osborn. He would have been a genuinely good Osborn, but...
It would have been, like, a bold choice, right? Like, as opposed to, like, a ginger with cornrows, it would have been like, hey, here's a person of color. Yeah. Like, interesting. Nah.
He's a good actor. He's got, he has a, at least here he's a kind of a threatening presence. It would have worked.
He's imposing.
Anyway, again, this is where we get to the nonsense keypad that could have just been a punch number keypad because it functions the same way. And Peter, this is important because it's kind of confusing later. Peter follows Irfan Khan into the BioCable development unit. Which has the double zero sign from his dad's notes, which doesn't mean anything. It's just a sign to the audience.
Like eyes. That's it.
Sure. He sees units of web fluid, which is convenient and will also be confusing later. Yes. Peter goes into the crazy spider room. I'm not sure why. Like, he looks in. He sees the spider. He's like, I'm going in this room.
I'm going in this room. No explanation as to why he's in there. No explanation as to how the room functions because spiders can just fall out of the cage.
Yeah, he touches one web and the
whole thing opens.
Yeah, it opens up. It's like, oh, I guess we're dumping our spiders now.
Yeah, right. And then they dump all the spiders on him. Now, I thought it was going to be like freaking Batman Returns where he just gets bit by all the spiders.
Yes.
And I forgot that, like, nope. He just he pushes them all off of him, doesn't lose it like anyone would in that scenario, and then leaves and carries one along with him.
Yes. So now we cut to Connor's in a meeting with Irfan Khan, and it's like, but wait, you just were in the spider room.
Just in that room. Like, you left there to go here for no reason to go back there. Means there might have been some editing issues where it's like, maybe those were out of sequence, but either way.
Anyway, we learn that what Connors is specifically working on is to restore Osborn, which is interesting on paper, the idea that Osborn has some sort of life-threatening disease that this is supposed to fix. And it's like, but how long has he had that? Because the amount of time Connors and Richard Parker have been working on stuff is going to be a lingering question for me. Because it's there's stuff that's just they're not using that's just sitting around from 15 years ago, but whatever.
Yeah.
So Peter comes back and Gwen sees him and is frustrated and asks for the badge back. And it's like, but wait, what do you think?
What do you think he was doing? I guess he just wandered off.
Like, yeah, but
if
like,
you want to be part of the tour, I get it. But like, you went off the grid.
And she knew that. She saw him leave. So what does she think he did? I don't know why she's mad now. I'm not sure why she's okay with it then, but mad now.
Well, and then she's not mad later, so it doesn't even matter. Like, he might as well have just not interacted with her, but he needs a reason to leave in haste.
Yes, and this is also where Peter gets bitten, which again, this is functionally similar to
the last one.
First Spider-Man, where he's with Mary Jane, and then he gets bit, except we're 20 minutes into the movie.
Right.
And he reaches for the spider, but somehow, I guess, misses it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Now we're on the subway. Peter's sleeping on the subway because he's already feeling the effects from the spider. Some random dude places a bottle on his head, which I don't even know. Is this a G? I get it that this guy's supposed to be a dick, but I don't even know what the prank is supposed to be. Anyway,
right. I don't know.
And somehow this is for me, and maybe I'm interpreting this wrong. Like, we see the CG zoom in, the water comes down the bottle and hits his head, and that's what like activates Peter's spider ability. It's like not the
right
bottle being played. Am I supposed to be impressed that the water is what woke him up?
Right? Like, and that's like the closest thing to spider sense we get, because it's just like his heightened senses.
Yeah, there's another thing that hints at that, the when after he gets the abilities, like he's like hearing better, like he feels wind and stuff.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. And then we get the Joker scene where it's he beats the hell out of everybody on the subway train.
Yay, our hero beats out people.
Right. He assaulted that woman for no reason.
Yeah, that scene made me feel weird. So Peter jumps on the ceiling, and there's this like weird stutter zoom, like it's a trailer. Like this is the
bullshit
trailer. It's like, ooh, isn't this cool?
Shot looks good though. I will say he looks good like upside down. I was like, a lot of the Peter Parker sticking to things looks really good.
It looks really good. And I don't hate this sequence. The one thing that makes me feel weird is he goes to comfort the woman and like whole turn, it's like, don't that.
Touch her, but he needs an excuse. And then I remembered it happening again in Into the Spider-Verse, and I'm like, so clearly Pascal or Arad just likes the idea of Peter touching people and then like right when he gets his powers and then getting it stuck there, because it happens to Miles.
Yep.
And it's a whole thing.
And he rips her shirt off, which feels unnecessary. It feels like it could have been any, whatever. And then
it's funny.
Precipitates a fight with the subway people. And it's fun and it's fine. It is weird, cause he does like moves, and it's like, is there like spider martial arts that you get from the bite? Like,
yeah. Well, maybe it's like his instincts are kicking in, and he's seen martial arts, so he's mimicking them. He's not actually good at them, but he's just pretending to do the things that he... I don't know. I got nothing.
That's actually a pretty good point, because it's not like he's doing, like, kung fu or anything, but it just feels...
He's just moving his arm.
Yeah. The one part I do really like about this is when the guy... And this doesn't justify it, but hey, if he's got the skateboard, this is a good way to utilize it, where the guy goes to hit him with his own skateboard, and he's like, don't do that. Don't do it.
No, not my board!
And then he just hits him on the arm, and it, like, shatters. He's like, I like that.
Yeah. Also, gets rid of the board, although he does use it later, but still.
Yeah, and we do see, I was confused about that too, but we do see he's got multiple boards in his room.
Of course.
And they've got like equations on them, which is like, I guess that's cool.
Because he's such a nerd, man. You know, he might be cool looking, but like, you know, when he's not skateboarding, you know, he'll stop and then be like, oh, I just thought of this amazing alphanumerical equation. And then he'll write it on the board. He has no other place. He has no surface.
Yeah, listen, nerds aren't cool, even though this actor was literally in a movie about one of the most successful nerds in history. But whatever.
Yeah.
Ben and Aunt May are waiting for Peter. I do have questions. You're on that side of the world. I do have questions on, like, why is it dark now?
Right.
Like, when did he leave? How are the...
That doesn't make any sense, but
because it's implied that it's like super late, and it's like, yeah, but he left at date. I assumed like 3 p.m. I thought that was when he was leaving.
Yeah. I mean, if he left school at 3, you know, maybe a couple, it depends on what time of year it is. Maybe it was daylight savings, and like, you know, because he's got to go from the city into Queens. It could be kind of dark. I would accept dusk.
Yes,
it's very dark.
We'll accept us. A fly buzzes past Aunt May, and he catches it like it's a bullet. Like, look out! He's like, grabs it.
I like that. I like that because Aunt May's like, what's wrong with you? It was a fly. But I like him being like, I don't know how to react to the stimuli. So it's like, like, my brain told me there was a threat, and it's like, I guess it wasn't, but I didn't know that. That was cool. I was like, that's neat.
Do you
think... It's a neat little moment in a, like, $100 million movie that shouldn't exist.
Do you think... there was any conversation of him eating the fly? Because part of me wanted to just pop that fly in his mouth.
Completely. There's no way there was not a hard fought sequence where someone out of touch and someone barely in touch was like, this is going to make or break the movie. Like, do not do this.
Don't
or
do
you
this.
Must, or you have to do this.
Because I feel like if I were Mark Webb in this situation, if I were directing this movie, I'd look around and be like, he shouldn't eat the fly, right? Because part of me really wants him to eat the fly, but he shouldn't do that, right? That'd be weird,
that's
right?
That's not a good idea.
That'd be weird in a bad way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pop it in. Yeah, I can see Pascal being like, don't make
it. Don't do that. Why? It's like, I feel like I would think of the Cronenberg movies I've seen. It's like, but maybe he should eat the fly? Maybe just the one? Okay, right?
Yeah, if you're going to go full if you're going to do something else.
If this were a different movie. So Peter's acting like he's high out of his mind. Like he's
totally
pulling literally a frozen mac and cheese from the fridge, like all the food. And it's
he just loads it. And they're just standing there watching him like he's on TV. And like, oh, yeah, he's hopped up on goofballs. Mm-hmm. There's nothing they can do about it.
It is weird how chill Uncle Ben and Aunt May are about it. I see, like, yeah, I'd have more questions.
Yeah, just watching him be weird. I mean, he is weird. Like, he's eccentric in this movie before he gets the powers, yeah. But he's sweating like crazy.
He's clearly going through stuff. This all builds to a joke about apparently nobody likes Aunt May's meatloaf. That's Aunt May's takeaway. Wait, nobody likes my meatloaf? I'm not going to listen. Peter's come home hopped up on drugs all the time.
Completely. Yeah. Yeah.
We were kids once. We grew up in the 60s.
At least he's eating. You don't like my meatloaf? What?
Martin Sheen was like, I am in an apocalypse now. All right. This is going to work out okay. Aunt May. So Peter in the bathroom pulls like from the wound. There's like the spider was like a bee and it left its stinger in him.
Yeah. He pulls out a like thread of webbing. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't get it. I don't like it. It was in the trailer, and I was like, what? I saw the movie again. I'm like, still doesn't make any sense.
And I wonder if this was just a way that, like, we know the spider's dead. He keeps the spider. No Silk in this Marvel universe. No, she's he's not. Nobody else is getting bit by this spider. No, sir.
That's right. I don't know. Weird.
So now we get the sequence where he's learning his abilities. He absolutely demolishes his clock and the bathroom.
I like that moment too, where he smashes. It's so fast. They really insist on him being fast in this movie, which I really like. Like his speed and his skills / reaction time. I'm like, I'm liking this. Again, it's tedious as hell because we've seen him be like, what? I used to be normal, but now I'm superior. Like there's nothing that's going to make me more bored than doing that again.
Yeah, what if we saw Peter get his powers again, but without the joy that Tobey Maguire had in the other one? Yeah. What if it's all just the worst stuff?
Him breaking the sink, yeah.
And this is where we talk about where, like, Peter's in his room and he hears the spider climbing on his boards and he seems, like, super sensitive to everything. And this is where, like, Andrew Garfield's theatrical tendencies are really, like, dialed up.
Dialed up to 11, yeah, he's really going for it.
Again, he goes back to being spider bites, and then he starts to look up his dad, and I did just like, when he's typing Richard Parker, Richard Pryor's name pops up in the little like, do you mean this? I don't know. It was funny to me. And then all the keys stick to his fingers, which is one of those moments that's like cute, but also like now I have questions of like, how does he turn it off? How does the sticking work? Is it, can you turn it on and off? Like what are the rules?
Yes. It's like tensing a muscle. I mean, that's according to the comic books. That's what it's like.
Great.
He's learning it now. I like that shot. I'm glad we didn't linger on it. I'm actually glad we didn't waste time going like, how does that work? I'm just like, who cares? I also glad we don't see the little, like little things,
the little hairs. Yeah, that's fine. And I also like that that joke is actually well set up because he's typing and then suddenly it's just nonsense and then he lifts it. It's like, oh, that was actually a well-paced little visual gag. It works.
Yes. Yeah.
So Peter is now like full on, like he's on the roof reading about Kirk Connors. Like he's embracing that spider life. And he goes to Kirk Connors' home, which why didn't he do that before? If he could just do that, why all the Oscorp shenanigans?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, he didn't look too hard. You know, he didn't click that next search result on Bing.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know. I've never used Bing, so I have no idea how the interface is.
Yeah, it might be like it just might be better than Google. Who knows? Connors lets him in, and we discover when he finds out that this is Richard Parker's son, he claims that he doesn't know why Richard ran. We get a moment like Peter catches a cup with like, oh, nice reflexes, that sort of
thing. He's got powers. Yeah, we know.
Yeah. So Connors and Richard Parker were laughed at their ideas until his dad was responsible for the spiders that I guess are creating the webbing that Oscorp. I'm getting ahead of myself, but there's questions about, are they using it? Are they not using it? Is it just there?
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So Richard leaving derailed Connor's research, and that's why Connor claims he didn't reach out, because he was angry about that, which, as far as justifications for that go, fine. Although it does, I do have a problem with blockbuster movies where they feel the need that, like, this needs to be the first time everybody's meeting. Like, yeah. In Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, he already knows Mary Jane, he already knows Harry, he already knows Norman. There's already relationships in place. So you're able to, like, build off that. You don't, like, by starting like, this is the first time they're meeting, it's like, well, then to get to point B, there's a lot of road we got to walk to get to point B.
Yeah, you need to have the, you won't believe that, like, Kirk Connors cares about Peter.
Yeah.
But they do the shorthand where it's like, I feel, I wronged Richard, I'll make up for it by, like, by shortcutting my relationship with Peter.
Yeah, but I just feel like there's a way that we could have done this where, like, what the MCU did, where Ben's already gone, and Peter already knows Kurt, and Kurt's trying to be a mentor because of all the stuff we just talked about with the Richard Parker, and that's where we start the movie. Like, that's where we're at.
Oh, yeah, you right can cut the first 25 minutes of the movie. Yeah, you don't need any of that. I mean, like...
And this feels like a good time to mention, I am kind of baffled that we didn't, like, I don't know why they felt the need to go back to the beginning. I feel like we could have easily James Bonded this shit, or Batman Forever this shit, where it's like, listen, it's new actors, it's kind of a new direction. If you want it to be a continuation, it can be. If you want it to be a reboot, it can be. But we're not going to we're just going to move forward as if those first three movies are semi-canon and just kind of, like, move on.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I could see them doing that. I mean... You had your high school period. Like, there's no Peter Parker in the future in any cinema outside of, like, kind of him being in college, but, like, that's not a factor.
Yeah.
You know, it's just two shots in the Raimi movies. It's where they keep doing it.
Yes.
And I'm that's why I'm, like, hopeful about the future of No Way Home and more, where I'm like, yeah, grow up.
Yeah. Let's
see the same guy.
Yeah. Let's evolve past this. In this moment, Peter asks, like, if you got it to work, how much would the foreign species takes over? And Connors is like, well, you know, we never solved this part of the equation, of course, because Peter's science is a special boy. He solves it right there on the counter,
right there in front of him.
Cool.
He's like, how'd you do this? Now I took that to mean that, like, Richard solved it and Peter, like, finished it for him. But that, like, Peter doesn't do it all by himself. It's more like, because he had the equation in his dad's briefcase, he finishes it for him, which is actually, like, a kind of callback to Ultimate Spider-Man, where, like, Peter solves Richard's formula for the Venom... For the webbing.
That's
it. His dad invented the webbing, and he finished the formula. His dad was like, I got this idea, here's the equation, kinda.
That's actually way better, but...
That's way better. And you could kind of say, like, oh, most of the big breakthroughs from Oscorp are actually connected to Richard Parker and his efforts. But they don't say that, which is, like, weird that they don't do that. But in any case, So I took that to mean that he, like, finished Richard's formula, but he didn't want to tell Connors that he has, like, more data from his dad.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, it's me. It's all me.
Sure. Yeah. That's I still don't like how much he's pulling from his dad. Cause again, it just goes back to that, like, chosen one stuff. And it's like, it just makes Peter feel like a more contrived character. Yeah. Now we get this whole sequence. We're back in high school. Flash is being a dick at basketball practice, and he, like, ruins a banner that this one girl's working on. And Peter gets involved because he likes to inject himself into these things.
I like him doing that. He's fun.
Yeah,
like, he's just like, I can't help myself. Like, which is actually kind of Spider-Man-y, right? Like, Spider-Man always inserts himself in those situations, and with, like, a quip or a joke, and he's like, I'm not supposed to be here, haha, but I'm gonna ruin your fun. That's something Peter Parker always does.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to get a whooping for this. Also, I want to, in my head canon, that girl is Jessica Jones.
Great. I love that. That's fantastic.
Because Pete and Jessica went to the same high school together and she had a crush on him. I'm going to throw that in there. That girl is Jessica Jones in the Mark Webb universe.
I love it. I'm a fan of that. He starts clowning Flash because now he has spider powers, and he straights up, which, by the way, then he runs to the backboard. That's traveling. It's not as impressive as he thinks it is. He demolishes the backboard, and there's a few moments in this movie where it's like, if I were part of Midtown High, I would be having some questions.
There's a couple of moments where he's like, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, everybody, in case you were wondering. Uncle Ben is angry about it in kind of like a weird way. He's like, did you humiliate that boy? It's like, yeah, so I didn't hurt him. Is humiliating a crime now?
Yeah, he made fun of him a little bit and then pushed him kind of on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, the real problem was all the glass. That's the real problem. And did you ever see Catch Me If You Can?
It's been a minute.
It's been a while. Yeah. I love that movie, but like, there's a great moment where DiCaprio is picked up by his father, who's Chris Walken, after doing something at school.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of scene. But like, mom is furious, and then dad, like, mom like walks away in a huff, and then dad looks at him and just starts laughing.
Yeah.
And the two of them leave. And I'm like, that's what I was expecting from Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate that Uncle Ben's like, made you feel good, huh? Hmm? Yeah. You feel good being a clown? Well, guess what? Like, that's the feeling you shouldn't be addicted to.
Yeah.
Like, that's that good feeling you get from hurting others is bad. And I'm like, that's an Uncle Ben lesson for another time.
Yeah. And it also feels like kind of a modus operandi of this movie. Hey, do you feel good? Feeling good is bad. This is a serious movie.
Knock it off, because we're taking this seriously.
Yeah, so Uncle Ben's like really worked up about it, and it seems mostly because he had to move his shift around, which also, did he need to come down? Whatever.
Where does he work?
I don't know. Well, he makes, in the, one of the deleted scenes, he apparently drafts bridges. Kurt Connors is like, bridges are the America's cathedrals, and it's like, I don't know what the fuck that means, but okay.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, because Uncle Ben's kind of got an inferiority complex. He's like, I'm not as smart as your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what? Who cares?
Uncle Ben also says, like, he specifically says, I'm not angry about the backboards. Like, I would. They say he's not going to have to pay for it, which is also baffling. I'm sure he would have.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, insured out the ass. All right, fine. It's weird. That whole scene is weird.
Yeah, so this Gwen shows up, and I do like this. I like Uncle Ben's little like wave getting back of him, like, oh, you're on Peter's computer. I'm his parole officer. It's like, that's cute. I'm into that.
I'm his parole officer is adorable. Him saying, like, my nephew wanks it to you is a little more on the nose. I feel bad for Peter in that scene.
Yeah.
But I like that Gwen isn't like repulsed by it.
No, she's into, listen, she's committed. She's already decided that Peter's this guy. And he literally stumbles ass backwards into getting on a date with her. Like, he fumbles the ball so many times, but again, she's committed to making it work.
She's doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Honestly, that's kind of true to life. The lady being committed to making it work. Whatever. Anyway.
It's all in spite of us.
There's a stupid Coldplay needle drop that I hate. I just hate. There's so many bad needle drops in movies like this. Yes. I just hate it. It's just, it's stupid.
That's totally fair.
Peter practices his powers while he's skateboarding. Because I do not like that Peter is a skateboarder. It makes him way too cool. we see him swinging on chains.
Chains thing, I'm like, why is he swinging? Like, all right.
But again, I will say that it is one of the few moments of, like, joy in this movie. It is not as fun or as energetic or as concise as anything in Spider-Man 1.
No.
But it's not awful.
It's not. I liken it to the I'm learning to fly Man of Steel scene, which is the only time Superman smiles.
Yeah.
So when he's like, I can fly. I'm better than you. Now I'll smile.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I can't wait to use my powers to beat up people.
Murder and frowning.
What I'm going to do from now on.
That's like great power.
Zack Snyder's like, literally like, I'm into Ayn Rand a lot. Anyway.
Oh yeah, that guy is a very Atlas Shrugged.
Yes.
Anyway.
Back at Oscorp, Connors is giving a tour of the lab. Peter recognizes a specific machine, and it's like the movie stops.
Oh my god,
and
that
like,
machine!
The movie stops. It's like, hey, this is going to be part of my villainous plan later. Connor's like, yeah, it was meant to disperse. Like, if you wanted to get the polio vaccine, everybody, without their consent, we could just launch it into space. And Peter's like, that seems super cool. And Connor's like, well, not to everybody. Some people thought you could use it for a virus, which, like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And it's,
or mustard gas or anything aerosol based. Like, why is it here?
It's like, this is clearly meant to be a weapon. And also, it's been there long enough that Peter recognizes it. Why is it still around? Why didn't you dismantle it? It's taking up a lot. It's taking up a lot of floor space.
Yeah, it has like a thing around it, like in its own case. No, that I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about his dastardly lizard plot.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
That's what everybody, when you're talking about lizard stories, it's all about the machinations with that guy. It's not that he's a raging lizard monster. It's that the plans. You got to worry about them plans he's got.
He's a schemer.
He's a schemer. I do kind of think, like, we shit on Spider-Man 3, but I do kind of think Lizard is the type of villain that could use, like, another villain, like another, like
you could pair Lizard with another one, because Lizard, you know, because Lizard, you don't want him to be Lizard anymore, as opposed to his villains, where it's like you're not going to stop Vulture from being Vulture.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
Lizard also could have really benefited from some Sam Raimi stuff, because Raimi would have used puppets and stuff. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah. We'll get into the Lizard design next episode, because boy, do we have to wait for the Lizard to be a thing in this movie.
Yeah, we're already an hour in, and Uncle Ben isn't even dead
Uncle
yet.
Uncle Ben's not dead. Listen, at this point in Spider-Man 1, Green Goblin was already nuking the board. Like, anyway.
Spider-Man and Green Goblin have fought already.
So Peter solves the regeneration process, again, because he's a special boy. And Connors takes the largest hypodermic needle in the world to the tiniest mouse and, like, puts the whole dose in that mouse. And I'm like, God damn, that mouse is taking a lot right now.
Yeah, you better get a couple more mice, because that's not going to work.
For those that don't know, that I partition my notes and I give myself little headers. And this one is, your father lived by a philosophy. Peter arrives home super late. In the meeting, he silences a call from Uncle Ben. Ben's waiting for him outside. He's pissed. I do like
good
this
stuff.
I do like this, though, because it is anybody that's had parents argue where they're not on the same page, where the one's like, hey, maybe dial it back, and the other one's like, no, principles.
No.
So
he's like this because of you. Yeah.
Exactly. So Uncle Ben says, you're a lot like your father. This is the full quote. You're a lot like your father. You really are, Peter. And that's a good thing. But your father lived by a philosophy, a principle, really. He believed that if you could do good for things for other people, you had a moral obligation to do those things. That's what's at stake here. Not choice, responsibility. And it's like, I just missed picking up Aunt May. This feels like a more existential... Are you okay, Uncle Ben? Like, are you dealing with something right now?
Yeah. First of all, Uncle Ben would never snap at Aunt May. Secondly, Richard Parker living by a moral philosophy about, like, with great power comes great responsibility sucks.
Yeah.
The fact that Uncle Ben would use it, I like the, you know, they're talking about all these retcons and crap in this movie and the next movie where they're like, oh, this actually is this. It'd be great if, like, he's like, okay, he's not listening to me. He idolizes his dead father. Maybe I'll make the mantra his dad's.
Yeah.
And then he finds out later it's actually Uncle Ben's or something. Like, but it's just for no reason. It's all over the place. It's so weak.
Well, and it's also weird because, like, a little context. There's a lot of lines in this where you're like, wait. It's very much like script language. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, if you try to ground this in any sort of humanity, you're like, wait, what's happening? What are we saying?
Everyone has a line like that.
And what's unfortunate is there is a way to ground this. If Peter was like, no, I was with Kirk Connors and I did this great scientific thing. And Ben's like, that's great. Your intelligence is a gift. But with that gift comes responsibility, Aunt May's responsibility. Bing, bang, boom, we're there. Like, where it doesn't.
That's all you needed. Yeah. It was a great way to do that. Fumbled the ball. Completely. The scene sucks. Uncle Ben, Aunt May, and Peter's acting in this scene is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It's too bad that it sucks.
And, like, and Andrew Garfield's Peter's comeback movie's doing is great. He's like, oh, that was my dad's philosophy. Well, then where is he? It's like, oh, that actually is really cut the legs under out of Uncle Ben right then.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess that's fair. And then Uncle Ben, I love how, like, Aunt May says, just let him go. And he's like, no, I'm going to chase after him. And I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah. There was a retconning in Spider-Man 3 to Uncle Ben's death. If that works better, the whatever explanation for Sandman in that movie actually kind of works here, because, like, Uncle Ben really did, like, put himself in a situation.
Uncle Ben in this movie is to Thomas Wayne in Batman vs. Superman.
Batman vs. Superman, like, where he's like,
Uncle Ben asked for it. Like, that's not your fault, Peter. You do not have to carry that. He jumped after a gun. Why would he do that?
Yeah, so as Peter's leaving, he goes to slam the door and the glass breaks because he's super strong. I
like that scene.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like, they do it a lot in the first season of Supergirl, where it's like little little gestures to remind you, like, oh, yeah, they're super strong. Peter tries to buy milk. This scene's so fucking forced.
It is very forced. I liked that he took the milk and threw it to Peter. That was his thanks.
Thanks. And this is another situation. So T-Bone won't let Peter take the 2 cents to buy his milk. Immediately this guy robs him. And this is another situation. Like, I was wondering if it would feel differently in this movie because the context is different. It's like, no, I'm Team Robber, man. Like,
yeah, no, screw this guy. Well, you're supposed. I think that's the idea: is you're supposed to be on the robber's side.
Yeah, but then the problem is then the movies are like, actually, that was the wrong choice. You shouldn't have been.
Right.
You chose the wrong choice wheel in this video game, and it's like, no, I'd still make the. I know we.
Yeah, no, screw that guy. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, no, but the right thing. That's it's still the right thing to.
The
do.
Right thing like, to do is punish this poor guy that's trying to make money, as opposed to this whatever. It's like, fuck all these people. I don't give a shit. Anyway.
No, it's true.
Peter doesn't help. Fuck T-Bone. The guy's name is literally his name edge says T-Bone. Sure.
He's good, by the way. He's a good douche.
Yes, he is. The thief, when he's running away, trips and drops his gun in front of Ben. And it's like Ben's response is I'm going to go for the gun. Why?
Why?
Why? Run away. Run down an alley. No. Kick the gun away. Do something. Get away.
Yeah, leave. Let it go. But no.
No, apparently.
It's awful.
Apparently Uncle Ben thinks he's John Wick.
And for no reason, he doesn't know what that guy did. It's awful. It's awful.
Maybe he's a cop. You don't know. You don't know. Anyway. Peter hears the gunshots, goes to find Ben. This is another scene, the death of Ben, where it's like Garfield really cranks it up to 11 on this one. Like, oh.
He's doing it for the people in the back row.
Yep, he sure is.
I like it. I like it, but it's also like, I feel bad. I don't remember. And I watched it yesterday. Uncle Ben doesn't say anything, right? He's just dead.
That's a good point. I don't think... Yeah, I think he's just dead. Yeah, I think
he's
just
dead.
Dead.
And it's like, that's kind of horrible.
Yeah. Don't worry. Don't.
Although, what's worse? Chris Robertson saying Peter, like he can't see him and then dying?
Wow.
Or just being a corpse? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think... The Cliff Robertson one's more devastating. It's more devastating. Anyway.
That wrecked me. I was in the theater. I'm like, I'm supposed to be cool. Yeah. Why am I crying? I know this guy's supposed to be dead.
It was supposed to happen. It's destiny. So back in the house, the cops show Aunt May a police sketch. I will say, going back to the deleted scenes, Peter's not there. Yeah. Like, he doesn't see that car thief or store thief guy is the one that shot him. And it's not until he sees the police sketch and it's like, well, that's a stretch. Because that's not like the police sketch is like... Great.
It's not a photo. Yeah, no. Yeah.
And we see that Uncle Ben left a voicemail because, of course, he did. Because this is, of course, going to come back in the movie.
We're gonna steal this and do it again in the second movie.
Is it clear?
Where a dead person recorded themselves and he has to listen to it. And it punctuates the moral lesson of the last movie.
And of course, we did it in Zack Snyder's Justice League. I hate it. It's so contrived. Yeah.
I hate it.
Is it clear? In this version of the movie, when this call was left, because it's like, was this when he was waiting for him to come home when he was mad, or did he call him? Because in the deleted scenes,
on the way,
in the deleted scenes, we see while Ben's looking for him, Peter looks at his phone and he's missed Vice voicemail. So it's like, oh, so this happened post when Peter ran away, pre Ben getting killed. In the movie proper, it's like, wait, when did this voicemail happen?
No, we just see him kind of walking around and Peter hiding from him. That's it. Yeah. We don't really see any of that.
So now in school, Peter kids avoid Peter like he has the plague.
Good stuff.
This moment, this might actually be my favorite moment in this movie. Flash comes to talk to Peter. Peter is not having it. He thinks Flash is going to start shit. He pins Flash against the locker and Flash says it feels good, right? And then he's like, I'm sorry, like, which implies Flash has gone through some shit.
Yeah.
And he says he's sorry. And he like, it's a really genuine moment. And it's like, oh, this is really compelling. Like, this is actually really
that was
works.
Good. Yeah. It makes sense. The guy who made 500 Days of Summer made this movie. Those moments are like, oh, you're making a drama.
Yeah.
Like about young people. Cool. Yeah, Flash is like, your uncle died, man. I'm not a psycho.
Yeah, I'm an asshole.
I'm not
but
a cartoon supervillain. I can't, you know, yeah, maybe I came on a little strong when I said your name, but like, you know, I'm not going to pants you.
Yeah, yeah, this is a version of Flash that it's like, for the first time, I'm kind of bummed we didn't get more.
Agreed.
Because it's like, does Flash even show up in Amazing 2?
No. I don't think so. If he does, he's like in one shot, but he's not a character at all. Ugh. No, we can't. And wouldn't it have been great if Flash was in the second one, because instead we had to trade him for Dane DeHaan, and it's like, and he's so terrible. Anyway,
that's the next movie.
But I like this Flash. Yeah, I was sad to see that. And then Gwen shows up and hugs him, and he gets away from her.
Yeah, he's like, no, I don't want that.
No.
Until later.
No hugs.
No hugs for me. I'm a sad boy. so Peter starts looking for trouble in the streets. He beats up some pimps and thugs in an alley. The impression I got was the guy was a pimp, and he was talking to one of the ladies that works for him.
Makes sense. Anyway. Yeah, well, because she defends him, yeah.
They chase him up a building. This very much feels like the scene where Peter is chasing the thief in Spider-Man 1, except again, less fun and way more labored. Forced.
Let's do it 6 more times.
Yeah. They chase him up to the roof. Somehow he falls through the thing and they're like shouting after him, like, I saw your face. And he's in the ring and he looks up and he sees like the luchador signs. He's like, oh, a mask.
Yeah, right. Well, because he's like, yeah, I saw your face. You're going to have to wear a mask from now on. And then he sees the mask that looks like Spider-Man, and I'm like, all right. I mean, I you're watching this movie, and you're like, okay, well, we're not going to do half the shit from the comic books or from the Raimi movie. And then when we get to the wrestling ring, I'm like, that's kind of a cute, if you're going to do this kind of, like, Batman movie,
yeah,
having the ring at all is kind of fun.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a little bright spot.
That's it.
So he starts... he starts wearing the mask. He creates a shitty costume. I've said this before. I do like that every version of cinematic Spider-Man has their own shitty first costume.
Yes.
Unsurprisingly, Andrew Garfield is the least fun of the shitty costumes.
Naturally, yeah.
I do like one. It was like one little like Raimi move in this movie is when
that shot.
The Dutch angle where Peter's in the background and the guy's robbing. It's like, oh, the good movies. I remember these.
Do I miss those?
Peter buys a pack of the bio cable. He gets a case of the bio cable, and I'm unsure how
he gets a case. Yeah, no, he clearly orders it off the internet because there's I was like, wait a minute, did he go back and steal it? But then I saw like there was like shipping with labels, so I'm like, okay, he ordered that. So they'll just send it to you, and also it's web fluid. Like now, I did like that he. Like retrofits it into a web shooter,
into a watch, he retrofits it into the watch and make the web shooter. So it's like, okay,
yeah, is that gonna work? But what's your propulsion system like? But at least he does. It's not unlike the code that Richard wrote, where it's like I take something that other people did and then I piggyback off of that and I make a thing that I can use. But like, does he have to keep ordering more web fluid from Oscorp?
And also,
or will he?
That can't be cheap.
No.
And also, what does Oscorp use it for? Because we see him watch a video, and they're like, "Oh, we can pull an airliner. We don't even know
pull an airliner. Why?
We don't even know the limits." It's like, wait, but you should know what you use it for, Oscorp. So what do you use it for? Is it to haul airliners?
Right. I assume that, like, because I in the comics they've. Lately in the comics, they've actually addressed like the practical applications of web fluid. But back in the day, like when Peter did invent the web fluid, like within the first 2 issues of Amazing Spider-Man, he tries to sell it. And they're like, what do we have? What practical applications could an adhesive that dissolves after an hour have? And he's like, I have no idea. And I'm like, I like the idea that in this, it's like Oscorp's like, we created this thing. We had all these great ideas, but it dissolves after an hour. So there's no use. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of money. And it's like, I'll take it. And they're like, okay, as long as this one kid from Queens keeps buying it, we'll keep
shipping it to him. I mean, listen, we invented it 15 years ago and we have this lab still making it. We'll figure it out one of these days.
But you're going to want a warehouse full of this unsellable merchandise.
Maybe it's like a tax write-off or something. Yeah, so whatever. He creates I do like the scene where he's creating the web fluid, and I don't even necessarily hate that it's based off something, because it is a bit like him just coming up with the web fluid cold feels like a stretch, but then again, he did just solve Kirk Connor's whole thing, so it's not like a stretch for this Spider-Man.
Not for this like contrived movie.
Anyway, so he instead of like starting small, he literally goes to one of the tallest buildings in New York and like handstands off of it.
Yeah. What? That reminds me. This is one of the coldest, most inhospitable, emptiest New Yorks I've ever seen in cinema. Like, it is so cold and sterile, and like it doesn't feel like Vancouver, you know, where it's like it's New York, and I'm like, not even close.
Yeah.
It's just like it just feels empty, and like without character. Like Raimi's New York is a character.
Yes.
It's like, hey, we're all walking here. Yeah. This New York is just like, and by the way, in this movie, he says I'm walking here. So like that's, but
it exists. It's in that universe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But in this movie, it's just New York is just this. I mean, and it's important, and I like him swinging around, and I like Gwen's apartment, and there's some like real hallmarks of New York. But like when he swings across that like that restaurant or whatever, and no one's sitting there, and no one's on the street, and there's no car, and I'm like, not even a person.
Yeah, not,
you know, like the Raimi movie. There are people. They're all hilarious characters, but. You know, in this movie, it's just that it's either empty or it's cold and it's miserable. And I'm like, ugh.
And the other thing with this scene, you think about the Sam Raimi one, like when he first swings, he literally face plants into a billboard. Well, what does this Spider-Man do? He like does this like cool little land on a chair and like whatever. He hits the tables, but it's like a cool little theater kid move. And
he's still Zach Morris in this movie.
Yeah, like, man, that's a great. Zach Morris is 100% what this version of Peter Parker is. So anyway, he learns to swing. He's got a makeshift police scanner, and he's chasing down a very random guy. And this is where we see Captain Stacy for the first time in this movie, 50 minutes in, one of our key characters, part of the emotional fulcrum of the climax, not showing up till 50 minutes into the movie.
50 minutes, yeah.
He calls Spider-Man. He's not one of his other cops. He's like a vigilante. He's not a vigilante. He's an anarchist. Fuck you, guy. Fuck you, Captain Stacy. This guy.
Right? Holy crap. And, of course, Dennis Leary, because Rescue Me is a thing right now.
Yes.
Did you know?
Yeah.
Rescue Me exists. So we cast him.
Everybody's That's favorite it. Show that we still like to talk about to this day, Rescue Me.
Everyone loves Rescue Me, but literally I remember being like, so you can't because Rescue Me? Like you just didn't have time.
Yeah.
You didn't want to bother. And you didn't want a 97-year-old man like you did in the last movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like Captain Stacy really goes out of his way in every scene to just remind you how much he fucking sucks. He just sucks.
Yeah, what a dickhead he is. Like what a miserable, like fascist he is.
Yeah, 100%. So anyway, Peter drops off a guy, webs off a guy to them. And he gets home, and this is where we get to the whole costume sequence. He's like, spandex, everything's spandex. I don't know what he's looking for.
Is he saying, like, I don't want it to be spandex? Or is he saying, like, I need, it's like Nutty Professor, where it's like, it's all spandex!
Yeah,
I don't know.
Unclear, but he's looking at, like, sports stuff. He's following two kids at school that are rejects from the Big Bang Theory.
I love those guys, because he's like, oh, that's a good idea. And I'm like, you're stealing nerd facts from these nerds? You're not a big enough nerd to have these thoughts.
What does he get from them? Because you're right. It is like they're talking about like momentum and swing. Like, and he's like, aha. And I'm like,
he's coming up with like how to swing properly. And I'm like, what?
Sure. Okay. He screen prints part of his costume, even though it is obvious for anybody that looks at the costume. Like that's a little bit more than screen printing is going on to make this costume.
Oh, yeah.
We get what literally, so we watched some of the special features because we were watching a 3D, so there was a behind the scenes about the 3D, and they literally call this, for anybody that remembers that video game Mirror's Edge, like the first person parkour game, these first person sequences they literally call the Mirror's Edge sequences, like literally calling it what it is. And we get the first person Mirror's Edge sequence. And he's on top of a building. He gets a call from Aunt May. She wants eggs. This will be shockingly important later. So we get to this car thief who is apparently the most high-tech car thief in all of New York because he's got a little like decoder thing.
Oh my
on
god!
It.
Yeah, he must have stolen it from Oscorp because they have all this high-tech. Highfalutin tech that is superfluous and unnecessary.
Yeah, it's just like, well, anyway, he gets into the car. Peter's already in there. Spider-Man's already in there. And I do, how though? But because there's no windows broken, does he have the decoder anyway? This is finally an hour into this movie, we get Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, and he doesn't suck. He's got the quips. He's kind of an asshole. The guy's like, "What are you, a cop?" And he rips into the guy because, like, of course I'm not a cop. What are you thinking?
in this tight red and blue suit, I'm like, yeah, it's good stuff. This is really good.
Help me out here. I did end up turning on the subtitles later just to make sure I didn't miss stuff. When he lunges at the guy, they get out of the car. He lunges at the guy. Does he yell crotch?
Yes.
That's great.
He easily read. There's no way he does it.
That's great. He yells crotch. he pins the guy to the wall. He starts webbing him. I will say the editor and me couldn't help but notice there's this weird like time lapse cup.
Yeah, we're doing like a jump cut. For no reason. Like, he's been webbing him for an hour. Like,
it's like, they don't normally, if you do that, you're going to do it a couple times to give you a sense of like passing of time. And it's just one.
And he should be covered in webs because it's like, that's the joke, right? It's like he's webbing him for like a while.
Yeah. It's baffling. No. It's confusing. I don't know why the jump cut's there. Yeah. Before that, the guy pulls out a knife. And of course, Spider-Man's making fun of him because like, oh, I'm going to be hurt by a knife. Although
that I liked.
You might. Like, the guy doesn't know. He doesn't know what your deal is. This is literally your first night out of Spider-Man. He doesn't know what your deal is yet. So then suddenly Peter like gets super creepy and like up close to him and like looks for the tattoo. And it's like, that is weird.
It's tonally inconsistent.
and then a cop rolls up and tries to shoot Spider-Man, almost hits the guy being webbed. One thing I do like about this movie is how consistently the cops are obsessed with Spider-Man they just hate him. And it's like, it's good. Yeah. Like, I prefer Spider-Man basically being hated by everybody, especially the cops.
Yeah, no, it's very much, that's a classic Spider-Man trope. I like that a lot, especially since the last one where everybody loves Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay.
Although we do get a little of the DNA of the previous Spider-Man movie does infect this one in the end run. Garfield really plays up the New Yorker aspect when he's Spider-Man. This is where you get the like, I'm walking here, all that stuff.
I'm swinging here. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
He swings.
He's doing a good voice, though. I like his voice.
It's a good voice. I was a little confused. He leaves the cop and he straight like runs for like a block. And then he hops up on a truck and then he webs. And it's like, but why did just web away?
Because we're doing this action sequence with a real person. Like, we're doing wire work. We want to get to that. Like,
all right.
But like, why though?
Yeah. But like, why is he doing it? After this, Peter gets like hit by like a bus and everything when he's swinging away. And I like James Horner's music starts playing because this is the first time Spider-Man swinging away. And the music builds like, this is the coolest thing we've ever fucking seen. And it sure isn't. It's just this.
No, it's dark. I can't really see it properly. It's not that the music is fine. It's very much like wallpaper in this movie.
Yeah.
I especially when Lizard came up, like when Lizard finally shows up, I'm like, where's the theme?
Yeah.
Like, where's the bombastic nature of these characters? Like, play something.
Yeah.
It just sounded like filler music. Like, hey, thanks Epidemic Sound for downloading this. Like, okay, it's fine. It's just like, and it's James Horner. Yeah. He's great. And he's like, you know, I don't know. Maybe they told him, like, keep it serious.
Hey, listen, yeah, serious. You gotta...
No jokes.
this isn't a jokey movie. It's a Spider-Man movie.
yeah, we're making serious money here.
So Captain Stacy comes to the cops, and he's like, 38 of New York's finest against one guy in a unitard. Have I got that right? Because, again, Captain Stacy sucks.
Yep. Doing this for the trailer. That's what that's for.
Yeah. Peter tries to sneak in. May's still up. He forgot the eggs. May makes him take off his hood, and he sees that he's beaten up. And May says the line, it's not great power and responsibility. That's not what this movie is. This is what the movie is. When May says, secrets have a cost. They're not for free. Sally Field sells the shit out of it.
Yes. Yeah. She's good in this. She was a good choice. I remember being like, oh, Sally Field is Aunt May. What a good idea. And she doesn't have much to do, but more than Marissa Tomei.
That is true. It is a bummer that, like, I remember Sally Field being utilized a little bit more. And it's like, wow, man, we never, like, Rosemary Harris was it. Like, Rosemary Harris was one.
Yeah.
Aunt May.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is where we should wrap up this episode. This is the halfway point of the movie.
Yeah, but Spider-Man at least showed up.
Rolling halfway through the movie.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Watching this, God. I'm like, ugh.
I swear to God, when I watched this movie for notes, it took me like 4 hours to get through it because it was just, oh my God. So that's it. Listen, if for some reason we put this episode out for free, if you want to listen to part two or you want to catch our other discussions about the other Spider-Man movies, that's going to be at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Sal, tell the kids at home where they can find you and what they should be looking out for.
Hi, kids. Look out for our flagship show, Back Issues, on youtube.com/comicpop, or check us out on our live podcasts each week on Comic Pop Returns, also on YouTube. Or if you like audio stuff, you can find us on Spotify and other places where audio podcasts are downloaded.
Seriously, do yourself a favor. Go check all that stuff out. Like, subscribe, all whatever. Go to Patreon. That's what I want you to go to Patreon for the rest of these shows.
Yes.
Thank you all, and we will see you all next time for Amazing Spider-Man Part 3.